Everyone should be happy.
Yep.
Services on Sunday, and then.
They only have 13 schools.
Good morning. Afternoon. I wish it was. Good morning. Good morning, committee. This is the Subcommittee on Human Services. I don't even know what day it is. Was it the 5th?
Yes.
5th of February. We're going to look at a high-level look at the governor's budget. Sean, I believe you're probably going to lead us through this, more than likely. Linda, do you have comments?
Mr. Chair, no comments. Both policy advisors are here from the governor's office. Sean Comer is the policy advisor on the health side, and Heidi Mawad is the policy advisor on human services side, and I believe also public safety, and the chief financial office as well.
That's Kate Natt, and Kate, you've changed positions, right? Didn't you? You used to be CFO or something. I don't know. I can't keep up with you.
What do they call them?
Not CFO, maybe.
Yeah. Used to be BAM, now it's CFO. I still haven't got used to it. So how about introducing yourselves, and we'll get started.
Thank you, Chair Bates, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kate Nass with the Chief Financial Office, formerly known as the Budget and Management BAM unit at Department of Administrative Services. I'll go ahead and let other people introduce if that's okay with the chair, and then that way when they say or elaborate on something I say, they don't have to reintroduce themselves.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm Heidi Mawad. I am the governor's public safety and human services policy advisor.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Sean Comer, governor's office, health and healthcare. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So the governor's budget was built on three main priorities: that we continue and expand ways to invest in children and families, create good jobs, and ensure prosperity for the entire state of Oregon. So, like I said, the budget was built on the priorities. It's not necessarily about programs. So he focused on outcomes rather than thinking about each funding in each program and each agency. The outcomes are identified in the 10-year plan, and then investments were aligned with those outcomes in mind. So the governor started with looking at the budget from what agencies and programs were currently funded at, and then aligned them with the priorities, and then made investment decisions beyond that. So based on the December revenue forecast, the general fund and lottery fund revenues were forecasted to grow by about 11%, and that's about $1.8 billion more than what's in the 13-15 biennium compared to the 15-17. So when you look at current budget, when you think about investments from current budget, that can include new investments and new ways of doing business, or it can also include caseload increases for current programs. It can inflation, general inflation, healthcare inflation, and also the fact that some other funds or federal funds no longer are available. So we have to, in order to continue those programs, we would need to prioritize them and fund them with general fund or another state funding system. So this is two pie charts that look at the total budget for the state. So on the one on the left is the total fund, $66.5 billion. And then the one on the right shows the general fund lottery fund at, you know, the $18.6 billion. For the human services areas that, you know, in the program area that you'll mostly be spending your time on, 26% of the general fund lottery fund is spent in human services. And then 43% of the state's total fund budget. And this kind of goes to what was discussed a little bit yesterday, that the human services program area agencies spend a lot of, use a lot of partner money, whether other funds or federal funds. And other fund sources could be major funding sources in this for other funds is health insurance or provider assessments. So the money that PEB pays, and which is the Public Employees Benefit Board, and also OEB or the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and also provider assessments in both the health plan and the long-term care system. So at this, I think I'll turn it over to Sean.
Thanks, Kate. So on the health side, the governor really prioritized three things that you'll see on this chart. So the first one is continuing investment in healthcare transformation. And that's really in three areas that we purchase healthcare for. So first and foremost, the Medicaid program. So funding the Medicaid program at the 3.4% per member cap that we have with the federal government and with our CCOs. Secondly, continuing the per member per month cap we have on the Public Employees Benefit Board, and we're already beginning to see the success of that program, not only from a budgetary perspective, but from a quality perspective and a member choice perspective. And then lastly, extending that work to the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. So for folks who aren't aware, that group purchases for the over 190 school districts in the state, purchases for about 160,000 Oregonians, with an annual budget of about $750 million. So again, thinking through how we provide that board and those members the leverage to push the healthcare system to deliver and be able to save money and reinvest that money in the education system and their employees. Secondly is continuing our investment in community mental health. We all know that's an important topic. I hope to have a robust conversation during this session about that as well. But the governor really put an additional focus on it in his budget by adding $53 million more, and that's all community-based investments moving forward. And lastly, really making an intentional investment around public health. Representative Greenlick led a group, and I know he's hearing a bill this session around what the future of the public health system should look like. And so we added some dollars in the governor's budget to continue that work, and also giving the state a little bit of money to do planning. For all the Ebola conversation, now we have a measles conversation, all kinds of conversations that public health needs to plan for, and we currently don't invest in them planning. The CDC and the feds typically give us money after the fact, but they don't allow us some opportunity to do planning up front. So that's part of what the governor prioritized there. I'll stop there just for a second if anybody has any questions on those before I move on.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Sean, I'm going back to what the guiding principles were at the very beginning for creating good jobs, building statewide prosperity. And you're just sharing that with me, and I'm not getting it. Maybe you can expound on that a little bit more, and maybe we'll see it more, but if I'm going by these guiding principles of creating good jobs and where you're going with that, where does that fit into what you're describing right now?
So, co-chairs, Rep. Olson, so the biggest piece around the healthcare is, one, in order for people to have great jobs, the fundamental thing is they have to be healthy. Their families have to be healthy. So that's what the focus is on healthcare transformation and what we're doing on the health side. The second piece of that is these efforts have saved the state money. And so we're able to either reinvest in programs like early learning, education, public safety, that will help with that as well. So I hope that answers at least part of your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we need to talk.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
And I would offer, too, that if you look at the kind of money we were going to have to be forced to spend in Medicaid, and we put $200 million of that on this budget back into K-12, co-chair's budget back into K-12 and higher ed, many of us believe that a better educated public means a better educated workforce, and that leads to more jobs. That's the kind of investments we want to make to really move the state forward. I look at healthcare, and I'm a physician, as you know, as something that doesn't build jobs. It's a cost, and we want to get those costs down and keep people healthy so we can really make investments in jobs and infrastructure and other areas. We can't do it if we're spending a lot of money on just keeping people well and not doing preventive stuff to prevent them from getting the system in the first place. So we think of ourselves as a cost center. We don't offer much other than a cost center, making people healthy, and we don't produce jobs. We don't. Senator Winters, and then I'll come back to Senator Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the task force on the future public health system. Are they going to look at actually the delivery system in its totality, or are we just doing a task force? I mean,
Co-Chair Senator Winters, what the group did is they sort of looked at the system and said, what should be foundational across the state? What should every Oregonian have access to? And figuring out how to fund that system from a public health side. So it's not just a task force. It is a task force to change how things are done on the public health side.
Well, and that's also, we've had a lot in the news with respect to alcohol and drug and mental health and those delivery systems.
Yep.
And I think some of us would hope that, we're actually looking at, greater efficiency and not just efficiency, that where we've got some real outcomes. Because those, when we look at particularly both mental health and alcohol and drug. I think we all think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in those arenas. So I just want to make certain that when we're talking about funding, quote, a task force, quote, unquote, that it's getting at some of the problems that we think that are there. I see you nodding your head.
Well,
yes, ma'am.
I think
I'm
he's looking
you.
At me because I'll use this as a segue. Okay. I've been talking for 3 or 4 months to individuals about getting a task force, a work group together. This session, similar to the work group that brought us the coordinated care organizations and mental health. We know that mental health, we don't have a functioning system in the state. We have a hodgepodge system, great programs, different places, one of which is in your county. The team, we have basically a SWAT team for mental health, crisis team that goes out. We need that duplicated across the state. That's kind of
well,
stuff
we like to pioneer for you.
You know, whatever you can do, we'll take, okay? But we need to make that systemic across the state, and you'll be contacted soon about this. I'm going to ask you to serve on that group. So the cat's kind of out of the bag, and we'll see how far we get with it, but it's going to be a real battle to get that done. Lots of issues involved with why we haven't got a full system. Senator Steiner Hayward knows about Representative Nathanson's involved too, so others will be coming on board. But we have to make an effort at least to try to put together a mental health system that actually is integrated and functions equally across the state. We don't have that now, as you obviously know.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Boone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and at the risk of going against our instructions yesterday and stopping this process every two
seconds.
Well,
we got enough time probably to pull it off today.
Okay, so I just wanted to weigh in with my take on this. And I see this, I mean, I see the prevention direction, but that takes people to deliver it. And even if you're being as healthy as you can, you still need people to coach you and help you along and keep you that way. And so in my area, there's always a shortage of healthcare providers, and they're constantly trying to recruit both doctors, PAs, and DOs, and all the rest of the permutations, and nursing staff, et cetera. We have nursing program at a community college. They all get placed, et cetera, and they say the same thing. So when you go in to get help, you know, a lot of the, I hate to see it go into a crisis mode. I get what you're saying, Doc, but I think that you're absolutely right. We have to have that SWAT team. We have to have the delivery system. I met with some people yesterday and talking about the saddest cases there are in children and mental health issues. And we really need to, A, put this prevention system into place and then work off of that while we catch up. And this comes from I spent 10 years in child abuse stuff and went to prevention after that. And it's still, and that was in, I mean, before you guys were born. And it's still not there yet. So thank you for doing it this way. And these are jobs, Representative. They are. Thank you for letting me rant.
Thank you.
Senator, if I could just add on to what Representative Boone said. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would just say, and normally I don't make a statement rather than ask the question, but what Representative Boone is saying is very important. And we were pleased in the 13-15 biennium to put $7 million into loan repayment and loan forgiveness programs to help improve getting those health care providers. And it's my understanding that both the governor's budget and the co-chair's budget includes $10 million for these programs this year. I see Mr. Colmer nodding his head. And I'm very, very pleased that not only do we not have to fight to keep the $7 million, but the importance of these programs has been recognized right off the bat, and they've been increased substantially. We're making a significant investment in both training the right kinds of health care providers and attracting the right kinds of health care providers to the most underserved parts of our state. Finally, we've got an exciting bill in Senate Health to improve access to telemedicine services, which will significantly, I think, improve access to primary care for a lot of the little things that will leave more time available in offices for the more serious problems. So I'm excited about all these developments.
Senator Winters.
Thank you, and I need to add that I'm very pleased that we're talking priorities and not programs. so that we move away from what some of us know creates silos. And I do have one question as you went through the process of putting the meat on the budget, whether or not there was anything eliminated in that process, because there's two avenues when we start talking priorities. You know, some of the things that we currently do may or not need to continue to do because they don't really meet where we're the objective that we're going. So I want to commend you on talking about priorities and not programs, because I think sometimes we get so caught up in programs and pride of authorship, whether they're working or not. So I.
Co-Chair Senator Winters, I think one of the first slides you saw from Kate was the agencies were flat funded when they built their budgets for us. So they had to prioritize what was most important and what was not. And they had to advocate to the governor about what to buy back. So as you can see in some of these charts later, it's even below what would be considered CSL in some agencies, especially OHA and programs. So there are programs that the agency either will not be doing or are scaling way back because of the priority levels. And those programs either aren't as successful as we want them to be or we don't need them anymore because we've started to do other things. So that's going to be an important piece of the conversation as we move forward during the session.
Thank you.
Thank you. Continue.
So the next two slides, I think, continue on our sort of focus on making sure we're getting outcomes. These are the year-and-a-half results for the CCOs. So again, trying to make that decision-making happen locally and drive them to the outcomes and allow them the flexibility to get there. So I just want to make sure that we highlight this as we walk through the budget, because the budget does drive a lot of the conversation, but this is also about quality and also about getting services to people. So we want to make sure that we do that. So this is just a couple of slides or a couple of areas where we see some tremendous success from our local communities around reducing emergency department use, caring for things in the community and not letting them get to the hospital, primary care. The things that we all know work and we all know should happen are now starting to happen. And just as a reminder, we now have over 1 million people in the Oregon Health Plan on Medicaid. So that's 1 in 4 Oregonians. So our system now is built and is successful to date, serving 1 in 4 Oregonians, which I think is really great. The next slide just gives you a couple of years out around if we were to continue the work that we're doing around CCOs, the work that we've started with PEB, and the work in the governor's budget around OEB, and what that would mean to the state budget and state savings. So as you start thinking about other investment opportunities around prevention, workforce, education, public safety, we believe and the governor believes this is critical in order to free up resources to invest in those areas. So this is just sort of illustrative of the work ahead, and look forward to the conversation around the health budget as you guys do your deliberations. Thank you.
John, you may want to make a comment about this slide, too. Some states have chosen not to expand Medicaid, and have not, nor have the states done what they've done with CCOs. What is the expected outcome of those states as far as premiums on health insurance and costs to hospitals?
Co-Chair Bates, there have been about 26 states that have expanded Medicaid, and I think the roles are beginning to grow. A lot of states are, now they've passed the election cycles, are beginning to rehab that conversation. States always struggle to fund their Medicaid programs. We believe our Medicaid program wouldn't be as successful today through expansion without CCOs. And you all saw 2 years ago when we were advocating for expansion, the financial analysis of we wouldn't have done this without CCOs because it wouldn't have been sustainable long term. And that was a really big point for the governor as we talked about expansion. It's great to expand coverage. We've all been around times when we've expanded coverage and then all of a sudden it becomes fiscally unsustainable and we have to pull back. We didn't want to do that. So with CCOs in place, we think we're in the best spot as anybody to maintain our Medicaid program and be successful with it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me again. As you, I believe I've met with a few of you, most of you know, the human services policy area is new to my portfolio. So, you know, I am inheriting a budget from Duke Shepherd. So I'm going to be reading from my notes a lot more than I would like to. I apologize. When it comes to child welfare, we are really focusing on continuing the investments that we started in the last biennium, particularly focusing on improving staffing and providing for the implementation of the differential response model and pushing more on implementing Senate Bill 964 from the 2011 session, which, as you all, I'm sure, are aware, is the Strengthening, Preserving, and Reunifying Families program. Another big area of interest to the governor is the self-sufficiency area, and that is our TANF redesign. As you all know, TANF caseloads have been on the decline, which has resulted in some savings both in the general and federal funds for this upcoming biennium. And so what we would like to do is reinvest $30 million of that savings into redesigning TANF to get better outcomes for the people and get them into employment more quickly. This is has a lot to do with what we refer to as the benefits cliff or the fiscal cliff, and will enable people to keep their families more stable, increase the flexibility and support services, and improve program capacity. In addition, semi-related is the employment-related daycare, a child care subsidy program available to individuals with certain income levels, and we want to continue existing investments and, in fact, add to them. Next, looking at our individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and aging and people with disabilities, we want to prioritize serving individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities in the community with a focus on improving their employment outcomes. So we are adding positions there. Those will allow for serving an additional caseload, providing for additional coordination of youth transition delivery through the school system, and it increases opportunities for benefits counseling. And I think
we could stop there for any questions.
Yeah, I have, Mr. Chair, thanks.
Representative Olson.
Hi, Heidi. Thanks. And gosh, it just seems strange that you're doing this rather than criminal justice side of things, but
I know you're still doing that.
Yeah. But, if I could just answer that really quickly, when Mr. Shepherd left our office, one thing that I actually asked to have Human Services and Housing, because I believe that the governor's vision for public safety is so interwoven with what we're doing in Human Services. So I felt like it was a perfect synergy of portfolio areas, though it is large, and I've got a lot to learn still.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I mean, I enjoyed Judiciary and Human Services together. I mean, I thought they really married up well. My question is, 2 years ago, the governor's recommended budget identified TANF cutting back to 36 months. That was what his goal was. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, I've always kind of thought that, well, I think it should be 5 years or 60 months, but we ended up moving it that way. Do you see that with this reinvestment and what may occur for the redesign going back to 36 months?
I'm not there yet on the TANF redesign. What I know is that as we have looked at this issue of getting people off of the benefits and into employment, there is a point where it currently is fiscally more sensible for a person to stay on the benefit rolls, because they lose so many of the subsidies and things that we do for them as a state that suddenly they have less money when they're working, and that does not make any sense at all, and that's what we're really trying to look at and work on here with the TANF redesign.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Just if you bring me up to speed, a clarification on the, just a moment ago you said we're saving all this money because TANF caseloads are down, and yet just this week, Erin Kelly Seal, if I'm saying her name right, showed us all these charts that was showing the percentage of caseload increases. And I'm trying to align those two statements of that caseloads are down so we can reinvest this money somewhere else versus I thought she was sharing with our policy committee that caseloads that were not even coming close to meeting the need.
co-chairs and representative. I'm gonna let a smarter person than me answer that question.
Not smarter, more experienced, Ms. Moet.
Chair Bates, Representative Stark. I didn't listen to that, but from what I understand, is one of the caseloads. TANF caseloads have seen a large increase with the recession, but over the course of 15-17, we're forecasting that it will start to fall. So it hasn't fallen yet, but it's all in the caseload forecast with the economic indicators and whatnot. So I think that's what it is, but I'm happy to align with Aaron Kelly Seal and make sure that that's the right thing.
Okay. Maybe I get some more light here. The initial caseload expectations showed we'd have a decline. The decline wasn't as much as we expected, mm-hmm. and it was concerned us the last biennium. Mm-hmm. It looks like now it's going to follow that curve down, but it's been slow to come down. It was fast to go up through the recession. These people were hit really, really hard. So you may be looking more at it not reaching the expectation of decrease other than the actual decrease. It is going down, but not at the speed at which we expected it to, and that may be where the confusion is.
And Rep. Kenny Geyer just pointed out that my graph was through 2012, so
that would make
better sense. Thank you.
Having been in the same hearing that he was in, they were showing the dramatic increase after 2008 on, but that it is starting to come back down. Part of what you were saying about it hasn't come back as fast is that people are only getting part-time jobs or they're lower wage jobs than they were prior to the recession. So, but I guess we will wait until May to get the caseload projection for the following year, the biennium.
So to Representative Kenny Geyer, they'll have a new caseload forecast for all of DHS and OHA starting in about May is when they'll release that finalized.
Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the reinvestment assistance, there was a time in history, and I think that the good senator here was also here, when we had an extended time for inversion, and because of budgetary constraints, we lost that. We lost that ability to gradually, as the person became more stable, and it was on a sliding scale. You might want to talk to BAM and LFO. I'm certain that particular information is there, and it's good that we're revisiting, and it's good that we're actually, if we can afford to do it. But yes, we did at one time. In fact, Oregon had been touted as one of the most progressive states in dealing and addressing this issue. That was back in
the late 90s.
Late 2001 was when we, because I was chair, so I don't remember. when we had to make some readjustments, and it was all because of our budgetary environment at that time. And you're correct that it doesn't make sense when an individual is beginning to become stable that they fall into another category and they're bringing home, it's less than if they never had, and we had those discussions back in those old days, and I'm glad we're having it today if we're ever going to get individuals where they're actually stable and on their own.
And there'll be a lot more discussions about this committee and all these programs as we get into the DHS budget and have a careful look at it. Remember, there's other factors involved here too. There's discussion about a minimum wage change. In some of those situations, if you change the minimum wage, you drop off this and you end up just where Senator Winters talked about, you gain nothing. And so there's a lot of different moving pieces here I have to be careful with and take some real thought. And we'll have an opportunity to look at that as we go through DHS budget. I would ask one question. We all kind of walked around here. There's some vision out there the governor has and the governor's staff has about employment ready daycare, about TANF, temporary assistance. What's the overall vision here? Just what we talked about, that we're going to try to smooth this thing so we haven't got a cliff anymore. We're going to reinvest in some way by expanding. What is the real nitty gritty here and what you think you're trying to tell us today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think exactly what you said. The overall vision is eliminating the cliff, is figuring out a way to get people back to work and slowly come down off of services. And so as we continue to lower or eliminate people from the roles, we are able to reinvest, and we're doing that, you know, in a whole host of ways. I mean, some of our other projects that we're not really talking about today, the individual development accounts through the housing housing agency is another way that we're trying to help shore people up financially so that they can go back to work without the bottom being pulled out from underneath them.
Thank you. For the quick, go ahead and keep rolling then.
Okay, so back to numbers and the whole program area. This is just a quick chart that lists the five agencies that are in the program area, the Human Services Program Area: Oregon Health Authority, Department of Human Services, Commission for the Blind, Long-Term Care Ombudsman, and Psychiatric Security Review Board. So it lists the agencies as well as their acronyms that are used on other charts later on, and then their respective budgets, both in total fund and general fund. So you see the total fund, which when you look at total and general fund for both DHS and OHA, they take up a significant portion of the program area's budget. This slide is meant to show you the fund types by each agency. It's a little deceiving because it's on percentage. So if you look DHS and OHA over on the left, they're the largest budgets, but if you look, they use a lot of other funds and federal funds. In fact, federal funds for both of them is a majority of their funding. So the gray is federal funds and the blue is general fund. So that kind of just shows you between the DHS and OHA, the state funds, or what we consider state discretionary funds, is a minority of their spending, and then they are able to use their federal partner money. And then in long-term care ombudsman and psychiatric security review board, they rely heavily on general fund in order to get provide the services and program that they.
Mr. Chair. Coopers.
Senator.
Thank you. Ms. Ness, I think it would be helpful for many of us if you'd remind us about how restricted some of those federal funds are. We have a lot of flexibility with our general fund, but often that federal money comes with significant strings. So could you just clarify a little bit about that? I know we'll get into more detail, but I think it might be helpful to remind us about that.
Thank you, Chair Bates, Senator Steiner Hayward. Exactly. Most of those federal funds come because they're a federal program. Either they're a federal grant, they're a block grant through the TANF program, or there are Medicaid money, and they come with how we spend within our waiver. So that's a pretty negotiated way of spending. That's the majority of our funding, the federal funds. So again, it's administering a federal program. So they set their rules, they set their regulations and guidelines, and we kind of have to follow them as much as possible, or completely, and there's waivers, but it's an extensive process to go through all that.
You also elaborate, because there are situations where we can actually realize a penalty for not following or for not having some kind.
Thank you, Chair Bates. Senator Winters, you're exactly right. In fact, there is a TANF penalty right now that we're still working with the feds on, that depending on how that plays out, of how the TANF program was from a while ago. But it's been, we're working with them on how to negotiate that. And it can come at a cost. And if we don't make our 3.4% in our health plan, the per member per month growth rate that's allowed in our waiver, we have funding at risk. That's our through the designated state health programs waiver with the feds and the Medicaid program. We have committed to holding per member per month cost growth to 3.4%, and funding is at risk if we don't hold that. And so we're going through on a regular basis, reporting to them of how that, what we consider the 2% test, and again, you'll get more into that later on, how we're performing on that. So far, we're meeting those targets. Everything's going well, but it is an ongoing, it's a stick.
And there are other issues involved, right, too. There's some issues in DD and other issues that we'll be talking about that we're negotiating with the feds on right now and have significant impact financially, but we'll get to those.
Mr. Chair, can I ask our LFO staff in the process, because it will be helpful for members to have just a one-liner definition of maintenance of effort and supplantation, because those become very critical when we're talking about funding.
Mm-hmm.
because often until you're doing budget, some members don't understand that the federal government does have a little thing that they call maintenance of effort. So it would be helpful if you do that for the new members.
Let's go through programs.
Yes.
Well, in simple terms, and you know what this means, maintenance of effort is that you may have a commitment to a certain program, and if you don't maintain the effort in that program, usually it's a financial effort, there are penalties involved. And so most of us know that, but we want to be aware of it. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, for the benefit of us newbies down here, if you could just go over the bottom line, what each of those initials represent.
The agencies or the colors?
GF for General Fund,
sorry.
LF.
Yes.
What each of those mean?
Definitely. Thank you, Senator Bates, Co-Chair Bates, Representative Kenny Geyer. The blue is general fund. The green, which there's just a very little bit, that's lottery fund, and there's about $10 million in the Oregon Health Authority for problem gambling and addiction services there. Other funds is orange. And then kind of a yellowy at the very top of Health Authority is what's called the non-limited other funds. So I think Ms. Byerly talked a little bit about what that meant yesterday. And then the gray colors are the federal funds, both in limited. So the FF is just regular limited federal funds. And then the FF/NL is the federal funds non-limited. And most of that is your SNAP, or your Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and also your WIC, which is your Women and Infants and Children Program in the Health Authority.
No other questions? Continue.
So this slide shows how the $4.9 billion general fund in the Human Services Program area is split between Health Authority, DHS, and then also in Long-Term Care Ombudsman, PSRB, our Psychiatric Security Review Board, and the Blind Commission. So we all know this. A lot of it's in Health Authority and DHS. About 0%. Is in the other side. This shows kind of to a point earlier on about making priorities and whatnot. This is showing that in 2013-15, the ledge approved budget was $4.3 billion for the Human Services Program area. The governor's budget is $4.9 billion, so it does grow. So we prioritize that. But also just to note that the current service level was $5.5 billion, so there were adjustments that had to be made, and we had to look at this budget and make our priorities where we needed to. There is other funds that become available by assuming that the hospital assessment continues into the next biennium. So that helps mitigate that, so it's not necessarily a program cost. We were able to use other funds, but there were still program reductions that needed to take place. So I know we'll talk more about that at the agencies, but for example, we prioritize community mental health over the Oregon State Hospital System. And so the state hospital in Junction City was not opened at its full capacity. We prioritize that $53 million to community mental health rather than putting it into the hospital system. So that's one example. And lastly, same slide as last time, only I just add in the co-chair's framework for 15-17 to $140 million less. Again, it doesn't look like a lot when you're looking at a almost $5 billion, but it's still, it's gonna take a little bit of work to figure out how that works out and make sure that we're meeting the maintenance of efforts and the match where we can. So, matching federal funds. And then that concludes my slides. Oh, did you want to go back?
Questions? I was just clarifying. Did you say 140 difference?
140.
Lower. Chairs. Got it.
Thank you, Representative.
Remember that. That then you get to multiply that by just about a factor of 3 to get the full amount. So there's a huge chunk out of programs, and we'll be looking at those very carefully. A couple comments too. State hospitals, both of them now, are very expensive, and there's no federal match for them. But our community programs do have federal match. And if we build a proper system there, we might be able to reduce dramatically mm-hmm. the amount of people in the state hospitals, which is a bad situation for those people to be in the first place. We have a lot of forensic patients in there. And Representative Olson, you know this better than I do. Mm-hmm. there is an estimate that up to 70% of the people in our prison systems are there with mental illness and drug and alcohol problems. I don't know if that's the absolute number or not.
What would you say it was?
Up to 70%.
I don't think it's that high.
That's the number I got from the director yesterday, but that may be wrong. And they may be there anyway. I mean, it's the personality disorders that really are, you know, borderline people that do know right from wrong, just don't want to deal with it. But there is a significant number there, too, I believe. And did you concur? You were involved in that committee for a long time.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you know, Senator Bates, the one thing we know that that bothers me, and Heidi gets this, too, is that your 36 counties with sheriffs that have jails, they are your number one facility for holding mental health people.
Yeah.
And I believe it's in the neighborhood of about 30 to 33% of the folks that are in Department of Corrections right now suffer from mental health issues. But somehow we got to try to kind of grab that from the front end and deal with it in this backdoor issue.
We'll have that discussion. It's going to be an important part of the discussion because I believe that you're probably right in that a lot of people in our county jails who are rotating in and out of those county jails are there for mental illness reasons and not being treated.
Exactly.
Any other questions? It's been a very high-level approach to it, and I don't mind any meetings early if necessary. We're probably keeping people from their second cup of coffee. Any other questions with the committee at all? Thank you for forbearance. We're going to close early today. Now, this won't always happen, so enjoy it. Thank you all.
Thanks a lot. You know where to find us.
We are adjourned. We are adjourned.